You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. Practical know-how to help your farm business.
Hi, I'm Emma Steele, East Midlands Knowledge Exchange Manager for AHDB Beef and Lamb and part of the AHDB Maternal Matters team. Today I'm catching up with suckler farmer and AHDB strategic farmer Mark Jelly and stabiliser breeder Tim Phipps. Just quickly before we get to know a bit more about Mark and Tim, this podcast is being produced as part of the AHDB Maternal Matters campaign, which focuses on promoting the production of heifers that are efficient, profitable and fit for the future. And today we'll be looking at the importance of building good relationships between both bull breeders and buyers, although to be honest, the same messaging would apply to all bought in stock. So, Mark, I'm going to start with you as our strategic farmer. Can you tell us a little bit about the herd you have at home and the suckler system you have, please?
Sure. Thank you, Emma. We've got a herd of 95 breeding cows on farm and we finish all stock. So all the calves are taken through to slaughter. The herd started in 1990 based on a flying herd principle, buying dairy cross heifers and putting blonde Aquitaine bulls to them and taking everything through to heavy carcass weights in the shortest finishing time possible, really. We started to run into problems with that as the sort of structure of the dairy herd in the UK changed, and we started to struggle to buy consistent replacements from known sources. And the dealer that we were using at the time to source the cattle was ending up, instead of putting a lot of 20 replacements together from two farms, we were getting them from five or six farms at a time. So obviously the disease risk, which we were already exposed to, became far greater, and the consistency of stock became far more problematic as well. The herd itself was struck in 2017 with a fairly severe TB outbreak, and we lost the best part of a third of the breeding cows over 18 months. We've got no idea where that came from, in the sense that we weren't able to type any of the cows for lesions or anything like that. The assumption is that we probably bought it in, but there could have been wildlife vectors or other issues involved as well. Part of our response to that was to look at our biosecurity and how we could change to meet the changing market specifications that we were seeing as well. So heavy carcasses were beginning to be penalised by our buyers, and we could see that we needed to lower carcass weight. Ideally, we needed to do that by lowering mature cow weight as well. And we needed to look at the sires that we were using on farm. And ideally, I think the perfect solution for us was eventually to move to a closed herd, or at least a closed herd from the point of view of replacement heifers, so that we were breeding them on farm and we had less exposure to the shutdowns that come from TB outbreaks and things like that.
Great. Thanks, Mark. So what kind of grazing system is it?
We're on permanent pasture, so the vast majority of our grazing is ridge and furrow. As a result of that, it is difficult to improve. We've tried overseeding, we've tried reseeding in various ways. The contours, the land itself doesn't really suit machinery. And as a result of that, we've found that we've got to work with the natural species that are present on farm. And the biggest surprise for us really is that the rotational grazing has made a big difference. But actually, we've ended up moving to longer breaks. We've gone away from the idea of a 3 or 4 week rotation, more towards a 6 or 7 week rotation now, and letting those wild and native grasses, if you like, really have time to develop and grow. Because when we were trying to push them and force them, either using fertilizer or a more standard short rotation that you would use on a decent ryegrass sward, it just wasn't giving the native grasses time to recover and to grow. So we're on a slightly longer rotation now. It's affecting grass quality a little bit in the autumn for young stock. So that's something we've still got to overcome. But from a cow performance point of view and a weaning weight, or certainly a growth rate up until midsummer, it's been really pleasing. It's grown a lot more grass. We have a lot less drought issues and vulnerability than what we used to do. And it's a system which we think we can make work and are quite enjoying doing.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mark. So, Tim, what about yourself?
Hi, Emma. Yeah, hi. So we are we're just down the road from Mark, just outside Daventry. We are a mixed farm here, growing arable crops. And we've got a suckler herd of about 160 stabiliser cows. We've had stabilisers for about 11 years now, having moved across to them from Simmental cross Hereford cows. And our main thing at that stage was wanting to reduce cow weight. So over those sort of 11 years, we've managed to reduce our cow weight by nearly 200 kilos without really compromising on weaning weights over that time. So our system is really based on having the young stock, all the bulls are kept entire, and we're trying to aim to finish them between 12 and 14 months. And then all the heifers, we'll retain the best ourselves for our own breeding herd. And then anything that I would be happy to breed in my own herd, I'm then looking to sell to other breeders if they need them. And anything that doesn't meet the specifications we have then goes through, and we fatten them about 18 months. Yep. Come in off grass. They go on a very short sort of finishing stage, and then they're off at about 18, 19 months. And like Mark, we're on a rotational grazing system. A lot of our pasture is permanent pasture on ridge and furrow.
Yep.
But back in 2015, the AHDB, through the Grass for Beef project, helped me set up a rotational grazing system over our whole platform, which has allowed us to sort of increase our output in terms of grass and kilos per hectare. But at the same time, it's allowed me a lot more control of that grazing. And previously, we were set stocking, but rotational grazing has really helped us just manage our grass and our usage of that grass through the year.
So it's clear you've both got quite similar systems then. So just for the purpose of this then, how did you two cross paths? Kind of where does your relationship start from?
I first met Mark at a local discussion group, Daventry discussion group, which very handily takes place in one of our very good local pubs. So I think probably the answer is over a pint after a talk on one evening, I should think, yeah.
Brilliant. And how does it work then, Mark? You're buying bulls off Tim, are you?
We've bought a lot of replacement stock from Tim, mainly females, but also a breeding bull as well. Yeah, I mean, I first met Tim, as he says, at one of the discussion groups locally, and I attended some of the grass meetings that were being run on Tim's farm. I have been sceptical of chasing any particular breed for our system for a long time, and it was more about finding somebody with the same philosophy and the same type of cattle that I wanted to see on farm than it was necessarily about the breed. So when I saw what Tim was doing off grass, and also the dead performance of his finished stock, the grades he was achieving, the ages he was achieving them at, things like that, there were a lot of similarities with our system, which really sparked my interest. Really, that's what created the idea that actually we could move away from where we were, which was a very high output system, to more of a conventional beef cross sort of thing. And yeah, that's why we started to look with quite a bit of interest at what Tim was doing. The animals that have come in have been initially to rebuild our herd numbers. As I said earlier, we lost nearly a third of the breeding herd, about 28 animals to TB, either directly as reactors or as IRs that we chose to cull, or as contacts which we were advised to remove. They obviously needed replacing, along with the replacement animals that hadn't been coming in because of the us being shut down and prevented from buying. So initially we bought quite a lot of Tim's, I guess a breeder never sells you the animals which they want to keep for themselves within their own herd, and they're looking to improve their own herd. So they weren't Tim's best cows.
Yeah.
But I was aware that they were the cattle coming off Tim's farm were still what he would be happy to breed with himself if he needed the numbers. As he's already said, and that was really important to us. So we had some first crosses of stabilizer cows coming in, which were Sim cross stabilizer. They've turned obviously out to be fairly big cows in the end, which isn't a problem actually on our system. And we also had some everything from that would be an F1 through to some F4s and F5s that have come in more recently as replacement heifers. So we had some cows with calves at foot. We had some cows and heifers that were in calf, and we've had some replacement heifers which we've put to the bull ourselves as well.
Oh, brilliant. So you've had a right selection then. So when you've spoken about it a little bit then, but Mark, when you first went out to purchase new stock from Tim, what is it you're kind of looking for, and what are your requirements? Do you have a list of things that you go with, or what do you do? What's your shopping habits?
Coming from a Hereford Friesian background with cattle, I strongly believe that if the system's right, you can get pretty much anything in calf, and you can calve it if you get the body condition right and everything else as well. It comes down to bull selection and management, but we've already proved to ourselves that you know, you can overcome a lot of obstacles if you're careful with your selection policy. So my selection policy was fairly broad to start with because we were desperate for numbers. We started off wanting animals with good temperament, and having been around Tim's farm and seen the stock on, at first hand on the grazing walks, I could see that we weren't going to have any issues with temperament. Also, knowing Tim as I now do, I was aware that they weren't tolerating anything that looked at them when they were calving or anything like that. So, yeah. You know, we were on fairly safe ground with temperament. Mature size for cows wasn't too important because we'd already got some very big cows in the herd and we were looking for replacement numbers. Calving ease was a concern for me, but coming from the dairy cross with a blonde Aquitaine on it, you know, we know how to calve cows. And I was relatively confident that if we could get body condition score right, and we use CBVs to make sure we were using bulls with sensible calving ease scores, that we wouldn't have a problem. And that's proved to be the case, to be honest.
The animals that you were looking for then, they had EBVs, did they?
No, they didn't. In the EBVs that I'm talking about are for the sire, so the terminal sire traits the maternal sire traits. The most important thing, obviously, with any replacement stock is that they've got good feet and that they are going to last in the herd. And again, having seen the cattle on Tim's farm and being able to see them without him being aware that I was looking to buy some stock at that point, it was quite handy to be able to have a look around and see what they were doing and look for the bad animal, which always likes to show itself when, you know, it thinks people are looking. But they were difficult to find, and that was reassuring. So it also helped that we share a vet, and very early on, Tim made it very clear that he was happy for me to talk to our vet about his herd. The client confidentiality aspect of it, which might otherwise have got in the way, meant that I was able to talk to the vet and have confidence that we were buying stock which they were comfortable with, if you like.
Oh, brilliant. So was it important to you then, you've discussed that your systems are quite similar. Is that important to you that you and Tim do have those similar systems?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, the fact that he's local to us means that his system is probably always going to be relatively similar because we're on similar types of land with similar climate challenges in terms of being quite dry around here.
Yeah.
And, you know, any land around here that's flat or can be arable is. So you tend to find that the suckler systems are on the more marginal land. It tends to be ridge and furrow, the historic ground. So it was always likely that our systems were going to have some similarities in that sense. We've always been a suckler finisher farm ourselves. So pushing animals through to slaughter, keeping bulls in tire was always going to be really important to us. And again, seeing the performance of Tim's animals on farm reassured us that that was the case with him.
So did you tell Tim all of this and like say go to him and have a chat about what it was you were after, or did you keep your cards quite close to your chest and kind of wander around with your hands in your pockets? How did you approach it?
Well, first few farm walks I kept very quiet and just kept my hands in my pockets because you don't want to give too much away, do you? Replacement animals or buying stock is always expensive, so you don't want to drive the price up too by being too enthusiastic. But at the end of the day, if you found somewhere that you want animals from and those animals are the right animals, there is a strong argument for being prepared to pay more than perhaps you would if they were just random animals that you'd come across somewhere else. Yeah. So the more I got to know about Tim and the more I got to know about his system, the more reassurance I had, the more I felt there was a premium attached to them to some extent. Not a big one, Tim, the more I felt there was a premium attached to them, which was worth paying to, we weren't going to have any haulage charges, for example, because I was able to go and fetch them. And there wasn't going to be any market commission because we were doing a private sale. So you could already see some opportunities to pay slightly more for those animals, knowing the background of them and knowing about them. And that does have a value.
And like what you said about health status as well, like knowing that is invaluable, really, and being able to have that chat with the vet. So, Tim, how do you approach the breeding of your stock to ensure that they're meeting your buyer's requirements? Do you breed what you want to breed and then think about what you're going to do with it when it comes to selling it? Or are you always starting your breeding program with your buyer in mind?
To be honest, I'm thinking more from a selfish point of view. I'm trying to produce the animals that are going to be doing to the best extent what I need of them. I'm not aiming to breed something that I wouldn't then breed from myself. So in terms of the phenotypic, you know, what the animal is, if anything's got bad feet, certainly disposition is a zero tolerance for me. I don't think really we can afford in this day and age to have animals that are in any way
aggressive, and generally I'd rather be working with cattle that are pretty chilled out. So we've got pretty much zero tolerance on any disposition issues. Feet, if anything's got bad feet, they'll be sent into the fattening pen. We generally have an aim in terms of their breeding weight. They need to generally get to 400 kilos at 14 months before we'll breed them. And actually, I've reduced that. If I'm breeding my own animals, I'll sometimes actually pick some smaller than that, because one of my main key factors is trying to reduce my cow weight. But in terms of animals to sell, we're aiming to get them to 400 kilos at 14 months. And if they're not at that weight, they'll end up going through the fattening pen as well. But one of the big key things that we've been working on right from the start really is trying to improve our health status and work on the health of the herd. So, you know, early on, we joined a health scheme and have been working on that to just try and improve the status of our herd since, really. If you can get a buyer to come around, look on the farm, see what your cattle are like, see what the system is. Generally, you don't have to do the sale work, because I hope that, you know, if you're doing the right thing with your cattle and they're the right ones, they should really sell themselves. I think that's the key. If anything, I'm really guilty of if I have people on the farm, generally I want to help them help me solve problems I've got. So I'll generally be telling them all of the issues I'm dealing with and the things that go wrong, which in terms of somebody selling cattle isn't a great idea. But I find that if I talk about the problems I do have, more often than not, when you have somebody on the farm, they've had that same problem and can help you solve them or deal with that problem in the first place.
And I guess that helps build the trust as well, actually. Like if Mark came on or somebody came on to farm and you told them everything was 100% sunshine and roses, they're probably not going to believe you anyway. So it probably helps there.
That's it. And I think from a seller's point of view as well, is that I, just for my my own peace of mind, really, I need to know if I'm selling cattle that I've done everything I can from my end, you know, to make sure that there isn't going to be a problem. So, you know, by doing the blood testing for health, by vaccinating, by trying to do all those things right, I've kind of done my best so that, yeah, if there is a problem, generally, you know, I know that I've done all I can to try and mitigate against it, which I think does help with that trust between a buyer and a seller, to be honest.
So, Tim, just quickly talk about what blood testing and vaccinations you do.
So we're a member of the BioBest health scheme. So during the year, we're obviously TB testing annually. As usually we're trying to run TB testing, making the most of the vet being on farm. At that stage, we'll be doing Yoni's testing. So we'll blood test the whole herd once a year, every animal over 2 years old. We've got a policy on that any animal that has a high titer, high figure at that stage, they get culled, and as do their daughters. So we're pretty hard on Yonis, and we are Yonis level one accredited and have been for the last 5 years, I think now. So Yonis, we've got BVD and IBR. We vaccinate all of our cows for that. But what we do is we do sentinel testing. So we sentinel test a selection of young stock every year, and it just keeps an eye on what the general level of those diseases are. And actually, I'm happy to say we are accredited for those, and there's no antibodies found in the herd. Again, for the last 5 years, we've been clear of those. We're BVD accredited as a link to that. Now, I did set out, I've been selling for the last few years, but I was a heifer buyer before that.
So clearly then you've both got this relationship where, Tim, you know exactly what Mark is looking for, and Mark, you obviously feel you can trust him enough to involve him in your decisions, and that he has this business that complements and is very similar to yours. What would you both say are the benefits from your points of view of having that trusting relationship? And Mark, I'll probably just come to you first.
I mean, the benefits to me is a continuity of supply of stock, in the sense that we were able to buy from Tim for a number of years, which was helpful because it means that I understand the genetics and where they're coming from. I haven't got to go through that sort of buyer screening process every year or anything like that. It meant that I could see the performance of the animals which I bought in year one and know whether or not they'd done what Tim said they'd do. And, you know, that's important as well, because obviously if you buy a calf, an animal that's in calf or with a calf at foot and it's going to do X, Y and Z, and it doesn't do it, then you're going to feel a bit hard done by. So to be able to see the animals actually growing on farm, knowing that when I wanted replacements the following year, I could go back to the same source and get some more, was really valuable to us. And yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing for us. It was that continuity of supply and knowing that we could source the same stock the following year.
Brilliant. And what about you, Tim, as the vendor? What's the benefit to you?
I think the key thing is knowing that when you have those animals available, knowing that you have got an outlet for them. And actually, the earlier you know, the better you can treat those animals in terms of where they're going to end up. I mean, the other thing with our breeding system is that we've been grading up over the years, basically from first crosses with our original cows, with the eventual intention for us to have a purebred herd of stabilisers, which we now pretty much are. Yeah, so I think the key thing, if you know what somebody buying stock off you wants, you can actually sort of gear those animals to what they are needing. So with our system, we've been basically grading up from our original cows up to eventually becoming a purebred herd, which we are pretty much now. But a lot of first cross, second cross animals that are no less genetically good in terms of what we're having would actually suit buyers very well. And they're doing just as good a job, but it's just the fact that they are first and second crosses that make them different. So They're actually very good animals to sell on to potential buyers. So if that is a good market, they're good animals to buy, really.
And how important is reputation, repeat custom kind of side of it?
Well, that's absolutely key, really. I mean, like I say, we're trying to do the best that we possibly can. And I would hate to think that anything would go wrong the other end. And actually, if anything should go wrong, then I would always stand by the cattle and put whatever problem right, really. And actually, you want an ongoing relationship. You want return custom. And I think probably as a breeding stock seller, if somebody's buying heifers off you, realistically, they're not going to carry on buying heifers from you indefinitely. You know, they'll probably buy 1, 2, 3 years worth of replacements. And actually, from that stage, they'll then be in a position to then produce their own replacements. But it may be then that in the future, they would want to be buying a bull off you to go on those heifers. And actually, the hope is that if you're producing a product that somebody's happy with, hopefully they'll then tell their neighbours or their friends, and that then leads to other future sales. So people's satisfaction for what they're buying is absolutely key, and reputation is a massive priority for us. Yeah.
So do you want Mark to come back to you then with both kind of good and bad feedback, or what's your kind of reaction to feedback?
Well, absolutely. Any feedback is good, and especially, to be honest, bad feedback is probably more important than feedback. You know, I'm hoping I'm doing a good job, but actually bad feedback is much more important for us, because if there is a problem, then I need to know that problem so I can then sort it out and make sure it never happens again. So you know, if there be an issue, whether it be health problems or anything else, it's very key that I know, and then I can solve that issue. Because again, on the selfish point, I don't want that to also be an issue within my herd.
Yep.
So yeah, no, it's absolutely key, really.
And Mark, do you feedback to Tim?
Yeah, we haven't had too many problems, to be honest. We've had the odd occasional empty animal at bulling, and I can pass that back to Tim. We, having come from the background that we have with our herd as a flying herd, health problems tended to manage themselves out to some extent. So if we had a Yoni's animal, for example, she might be in the herd the 1 year, The next year she wouldn't get in calf and she goes a cull or whatever. So to some extent we were able to not necessarily ignore our disease status, but certainly manage our disease status as we with the system we were running. We haven't got any huge health problems within the herd, but we are Yeronese testing and we are occasionally picking up animals which have got high titer scores, and those animals are culled, or higher titer scores, should I say. And in that sense, I'm passing that information back to Tim. I don't think it's come from his herd. The situation that we're both in with the testing regimes, sharing a vet and everything else, it is highly likely that is from my end and my problem. But on the other hand, if Tim doesn't know, it's always useful for Tim to be able to look at his records and see what's going on and everything else. So, yeah, I guess the seller needs to make clear to the buyer if they do want the feedback, though, because I can imagine if it wasn't Tim, we know each other reasonably well now, and we have a bit of a laugh together and a beer occasionally. So I do feel I can tell him if I've got a problem. I'm not sure that I would be able to do that with a buyer that I only just met. So if sellers want feedback, they really ought to be making it clear to the buyers that they would like that, because it could be quite an uncomfortable phone call to ring a guy up in Cumbria and say, oh, yeah, I've bought this. I think that this is a problem. I think, though, that sellers need to be open-minded and they need to be looking for that feedback, because it's a great way for both herds to improve.
Yeah, well, like Tim just said, the feedback, the negative feedback is almost more important than the positive feedback. I mean, everybody likes to be told that things are going well, but you can't change a problem or rectify a problem if you don't know about it. So I would like to think most sellers would want to know. But as you say, it's an uncomfortable conversation for the buyer, maybe.
Yeah, the positive feedback doesn't want to be too positive, because it might price it next time, mightn't it? But, joking aside, that two-way conversation is really, really valuable. You can see within your own herd what's going on. You know that if you've had a cow that's had temperament issues at calving, for example, that there might be a risk that will happen with its daughter. If we find an animal that has temperament issues, I will certainly be passing that back to Tim. I wouldn't expect it to happen knowing his stock. But those kind of conversations, if they don't happen, that information stops at the farm gate and it's a loss to both parties, really. So whilst I wouldn't expect him to put right any of the problems that we've got on farm that may well have originated here, from his point of view, he deserves to know if there's an issue. And also, it helps me knowing that maybe in the background he knows why an animal hasn't performed. Perhaps he looks at it and says, well, actually, look, there is some genetics from a cow that I didn't like that ended up going because she had bad feet. You've got it as well, or whatever. I don't know. We've not encountered that situation, but certainly we've got a relationship that's close enough that we can talk about those sort of things.
Yeah. And Tim, you mentioned that you want to know anything that's gone wrong so you can kind of stand by it and rectify it if appropriate. Just slightly off topic, but do you do any kind of, especially for bulls, any kind of fertility checks or anything before they leave the farm to try and minimise that?
Yeah, and it's not only for bulls. So all of our heifers, we get vet checked.
Oh, great.
For 14 months, the vet always comes, and the big priority is to make sure they're not pre-martins, or make sure that everything physiologically is right for them to be okay to breed. Make sure nothing's in calf, obviously. So that's key for the heifers. But then in terms of the bulls. Well, the first thing we check, I check all 12-month-old bulls here. We measure their scrotal circumferences, which is key for fertility, not only for them, but passing that fertility on to their daughters. So anything under a certain circumference, we don't carry on for breeding, and we don't put up for sale. And then we, once everything in terms of their figures and in terms of their physiology is right, we then get the vet out onto those bulls, and they're given a full, it would be the equivalent of a pre-breeding check. So the vets will check their heart, their physiology. They'll take a semen sample from them and test the semen to make sure that that's okay. And basically, I wouldn't sell anything off the farm that didn't have a full bill of health in terms of their fertility testing, really. And I think that, again, it's for my peace of mind as well as the person buying.
Yeah, definitely. And you both choose to deal via private sales, and that's great. But obviously, a lot of people that will be listening to this podcast will purchase stock via markets. Tim, I'll come to you just because we've been talking to you. But do you think the importance of building these relationships and dialogue between breeder and buyer is still important when you're using a market?
I think it's still important. I think the ability to do that is probably less, it's not quite so easy.
Yeah.
But if you know you're going to be buying stock from that person, they're up for sale, then I think probably from a seller's point of view, if somebody phoned you and said, you know, look, I know you're selling a few heifers in market next week, could I come and have a look round? There'd be very few sellers who would say no.
Yeah.
Or at least to have that conversation, just have that peace of mind as to how that animal has been bought on, whether it's been fed, whether it's been fertility tested, all of those things. Actually, you kind of need to get a feel of what the background of that animal is before you buy it. But then I think the key thing at market though is actually prioritizing what you're happy to compromise on. And if you're, you know, if health status and health is your key, then you don't compromise on that. But the thing with the market, there will always be other people there on the day who will be willing to buy an animal that hasn't been fertility tested, or buy an animal that hasn't had the, you know, hasn't got the health status. So I think you've got to have a very clear idea of what your priorities are and what you're not willing to compromise on in that situation.
Yeah. And Mark, how do you think the buyer should approach that? Do you think there's more things buyers could do to make sure that they get that relationship and that two-way conversation when in a market environment?
I think it depends a bit on how you go about buying and what sort of animals you're buying. From our own personal experience, when we were buying Hereford Frisian cattle, we weren't dealing with the people that bred them. The animals had passed through two or three farms before they came to us, because they'd gone from the dairy farm they were born on to a rearing unit. Sometimes they'd gone on to a second holding, and then before growing to a bulling age at 15 to 24 months, as they would have been at that time. So we are not in a strong dairy part of the country. Live markets around here don't tend to have a huge number of those type of calves in them. So we were actually putting our trust in a dealer to source the right sort of animals from us, right, for us. And that was a relationship that grew over a number of years.
Yeah. So that was with the dealer, was it?
Yeah. And he would go to the market and he would buy them. Interestingly, when we look back at the ages of cows that are still in the herd in some instances, quite often you can see the longer lasting animals have all come from the same holding. Now, that's probably not a surprise, but when you're buying a batch of heifers and you've got three holdings worth of heifers within that that batch, you can see the good farm and you can see the bad farm, if you like, from a longevity point of view. It doesn't necessarily reflect on calving ease or production or anything else. To have established a relationship with the people producing the right calves would have been really nice and really good, but often that wasn't possible to do. Either they were not interested, or they'd packed up, or the circumstances had changed. So you were always looking back at animals thinking, damn, it's a shame we didn't have a whole herd of them. But in the system we were in, the flying herd scenario, to some extent, cull animals going out were about the same price as replacements coming in, and therefore we could chop and change without too many issues. If I was looking to buy through a live market without using the dealer, I think I'd want to be there more than just on the day that I was buying to see stock going through. I suspect that if I'd got previous experience of buying from certain producers or farmers, knowing the type of stock that they produced, you wouldn't necessarily have the background and the backstory that I've got with Tim, but you would certainly be looking for what you would regard as a trustworthy buyer. As I say, this is well out of my comfort zone in terms of having done it, because although I've been to live markets, we've not traded through them for a very long time. So, I certainly wouldn't be very comfortable myself buying animals straight out the ring to think that they were going to be the perfect animals. That's not to say it can't be done, but it's not the way that I would do things.
I guess it's just about asking more questions, isn't it? So if you are after EBVs or information on health status or management or anything like that, like you say, if you can, and like Tim said, if you can get to the herd beforehand and have a look, that's great. But even on the day, you can ask those questions.
I think that you know, to be fair to the live markets, they are getting a lot better at this. They realize that there is added value for their clients that are selling through them to actually provide this information. And, you know, hopefully as we move forwards over the coming years, things like BVD status and stuff like that, rather than it being the sort of thing that might appear at a society sale or something like that, will become a lot more common for it to be displayed for all buyers so that we can all see what's going on with everything that's there. At the end of the day, if you're vaccinating your cattle, if you're testing your cattle or anything like that, and you're selling through a live market, you should be proud of the fact that they are better than if you weren't doing it. So it's worth that being advertised to the people that are doing the buying so that they know what they're buying. As I say, I'm fortunate in this situation that we've got a private relationship rather than a one through the live market. I think it removes an element of risk potentially, but it doesn't give me that competitive bidding element, which would potentially mean I could have got a better deal if Tim was sticking his cattle through the market and, you know, we could have established their value through that route. But I don't feel as though we've in any way suffered with the route we've gone down either.
Yeah, no. And I just want to come back then to one of the points you made about if you've got something you're proud of and you're doing really well as a vendor, shout about it. Because so many times in a previous life, I worked for Signet and I had clients that I knew were performance recording and had great EBVs. And then you'd go around a market and they weren't on display. So, yeah, if you've got something to shout about, be honest, always be honest, but shout about it.
Yeah, certainly, because there'll be a lot of buyers present who don't value what you're shouting about because it isn't important to them or whatever. And that's fine. But there will be buyers present who actually would look at it and think, well, actually, that shows that if they're recording this or they're doing that or they're vaccinating or they're testing, it helps me make a decision versus the next lot that's coming into the ring. And, you know, anything that helps a buyer understand the value of the cattle that's going through a live ring has to be a positive thing.
Yeah, and equally, if you're a buyer and you want that information and it's not displayed, ask for it. Because by asking, even if the answer is, no, I haven't got it, at least you're setting something off that's something buyers are wanting and asking for. So it's just that two-way communication again. So just quickly before we wrap up then, it's really great that you both have this relationship and that you're able to do what you do and you've found each other. But finding the right person or the right herd to start with can be really, really challenging, as you've touched on, Mark. How do you suggest buyers can do that? And where would you start now if you were looking to build a new relationship?
You're making it sound like we met on Muddy Matches or something like that.
I know, before we started recording this, I needed to use a new word other than the relationship. But there we go, that's what it is.
No, look, it's the way that we struggled for a long time to find a replacement policy that was going to work for us. As I say, we'd been using a dealer to source cattle. We weren't comfortable with that relationship with the dealer. Actually, the dealer died, so that it kind of ended that relationship very abruptly. But we weren't comfortable with that kind of ongoing exposure to bought-in diseases on the farm. Having had the brush with TB that we had, we wanted to try and make the herd more biosecure. Now, that doesn't necessarily happen overnight, but the only way we were going to find a relationship that we were happy with was by working at it. So farm events were a great way of doing that. We went on some farm walks organised by our vet practice. We went on some stuff organised by HDB. I looked online on some of the online auction sites and things like that for cattle. I even spoke to some of the breed societies about replacement stock as well. And fairly quickly, I found a few local farmers who had some good quality stock that I was interested in, and Tim was one of those. There were a couple of others with different breeds in other parts of the region that I was also looking at. But the more I thought about it and the more I spoke to Tim about where he wanted his herd to go, the more I realized how aligned our views were. So it was making the best use of those networking opportunities. And I mean, you know, AHDB have been doing farm events for a very long time. You've hosted quite a few on my farm as well. I tend to only take one thing home from any meeting. And sometimes the meetings you go to, actually the conversations you've had with people at the meeting are as valuable as the content of the meeting in a way. Yep. And, you know, seeing Tim's challenges with his grazing, seeing the performance of his finishing bulls and all that sort of stuff, it wasn't directly what the meeting was about, but it helped to just set the fireworks off that, hang on, this is something which we're trying to do, and if he can do it, we could do it as well. And that's where, you know, that networking element, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and to be fair, Tim started this conversation by saying that the just the value of sitting in the bar and having a pint as well, and like you say, just talking to people and getting out the farm.
I'm sure there's many parts of the country where sitting in the bar and having a pint will be more productive than going on a farm walk, to be honest. you know, we're not in an area of the country where that kind of social activity happens as much as it does perhaps in some other parts of the country. But it's certainly something which helps break the ice, I guess. I think our herds would have come across each other one way or another anyway through our vet practice and farm walks and stuff. But yeah, it's important.
Yeah. So, Tim, I'm going to come back to you. So on what we've kind of discussed today and that breeder-buyer relationship and two-way dialogue, what would kind of your top tips be for somebody going out and looking at new stock, or somebody that had some stock to sell? What would you be saying were your top tips?
I think the key thing is just be as honest as you can in both directions. If you're a buyer and you want a specific thing, then you make that very clear. And similarly, if you're selling cattle, then be as honest as you can about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what your aims are.
And Mark, what about yourself?
I think from my point of view as a buyer, the most important aspects of this in the first place were realising where my, to use AHDB jargon, where my important KPIs lay. So calf survival for me is the absolute number one priority. I value that as a suckle breeder above all else. If I end up with a cow that's gone over winter and loses a calf, that is a huge impact on my profitability. So I wanted cows that were going to calve well. I wanted to be sure that we were going to have quick recovery. And both those aspects are brought about by the genetics in the background and what the herd that you're buying from is doing. So that was really important to us. The end use of your animals is obviously important as well. If you're selling a lot of stock at weaning, then the carcass conformation and things like that of the finished animal isn't perhaps as important. Growth rates to 200 days are going to be really important to you and things like that. So if you can look at the information that the seller has, that's got to be a good starting point as well. But we were buying from a higher health herd into a lower health herd. So from our point of view, you know, we knew that the animals coming from Tim, whilst genetically might not be his top end, were still probably going to be better than we already had on farm. But they were coming with a disease status, which meant that they weren't bringing problems with them. And the biggest risk to my herd performance is bringing diseases like BVD onto farm and bringing problems in, which I've then got to manage back out again. So we were realistic. We wanted replacements quite quickly. But we needed that calf performance and calf survival as the key traits that we were looking for.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much, both of you, for your time today. I think this relationship you've both got between your businesses sets a great example. And I hope our listeners have both enjoyed the conversation and taken away a couple of things today that they can maybe look at bringing more into their businesses. This podcast has been produced as part of Maternal Matters. So for more information on Maternal Matters, please go to ahdb.org.uk/maternal-matters. Or follow us on social media using hashtag Maternal Matters. For more information on the questions to ask when buying breeding stock and lots of other factors to consider, the AHDB Choosing Bulls for Better Returns manual is available both online and in hard copy. And thank you very much.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.